Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, and to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free. Welcome to Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce Podcast. And today's title is Bet You Didn't Know That Adultery Can Bite You in the Ass, Even in a No-Fault State. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie.
And so we're just going to talk about some things on these Bet You Didn't Know series that are kind of the things about divorce that maybe myths or things that people didn't know about.
You know, really those things that are behind the curtain, right, Rebecca? You know, the things that people might not know if they haven't participated in thousands of divorces like we have.
Yeah, and we're also trying to keep it entertaining, so we'll share some funny stories and some, you know, things that maybe you might find funny or outrageous, but it will also teach us a lesson about what to do and what not to do in situations like that.
Exactly. We're trying to learn from other people's mistakes.
Yes, exactly. So as far as a no-fault state, all states have some sort of a no-fault way of getting divorced now, but there's a huge myth around the idea of no fault. Some people equate that to meaning like that you don't need fault, that fault never comes into play. That,
right.
You know, you can do whatever you want and get away with it. But that's not what no fault means. It just means that you don't have to prove fault in order to get divorced. Right, Susan?
Right. You know, I've always explained to clients that, you know, before we had no-fault divorce, which I think pretty much every state has some version of that now, but before we had that, you actually had to prove that your spouse had either committed adultery, had abandoned you pursuant to a legal definition, had abused you, that your spouse had done something to rise to that level of legal wrong before you could even get divorced from them. And if you couldn't prove that, you know, and by their nature, those things are hard to prove. That's the type of behavior people do not advertise or leave evidence of if they can help it. And if you couldn't prove it, you could not get divorced. So no fault was really created to try and deal with that.
Yeah, and I remember, for example, that New York was one of the last holdouts as far as no fault, and they actually used to have a 1 year required separation period, which is a really long time before you could even file for divorce, because
yeah,
they wanted to give people that opportunity to, you know, prove their grounds. And so, They abolished that a few years ago, and I think they were one of the last holdouts.
I think they were too. You actually had to be legally separated for a full year before you could convert that to a divorce.
Yeah, which is a long time.
It is. That's a limbo.
To live your life in limbo like that. Exactly. Sure. But sometimes fault actually does matter. And for example, in Florida, in the alimony statute, it actually references infidelity, although I personally, even though I've been practicing law almost 20 years, I have seen infidelity certainly come into play, and you and I are going to talk about some of our more outrageous examples, but I've never seen a judge actually say, I'm giving more alimony because this statute allows me to, and here's the reference to that law. I've never actually seen it used like that. And the child custody statute does reference abuse. If there's domestic violence, that can come into play. You mentioned shock the judicial conscience. Tell the listeners about that.
Yeah, I always advised clients, so because like you, Rebecca, I have not seen a judge specifically reference someone's bad behavior in the actual judicial award of either more alimony or more property to the wronged spouse, I would call it. But I have certainly seen instances where I would say the client's behavior rose to a level that it shocked the judicial conscience. And that's what I mean by that is you have to remember that judges, especially family court judges who sit there every day hearing what people get up to in their marriages and when their marriages are breaking down, they've heard a lot. But if you, what your behavior is has rises to the level where you actually shock that judge or you actually sort of make them pause and say, wow, that wasn't great, that person's behavior. I have certainly seen judges come down on the side of awarding what seems to be a much greater amount of alimony or for a longer period of time, or in other cases where they will give a much greater proportion of the property distribution to the wronged spouse. So certainly if your behavior goes to the outside what the court might say they see in your average case, because we do see adultery, right, Rebecca, in a lot of cases. I mean,
yeah, tons. I mean,
extremely common.
Yeah.
Because of its nature. I always say it's the symptom of a broken marriage, not the reason for the broken marriage. Certainly happily married people don't usually go out and cheat. So usually there's something that's gone wrong in the marriage before you find the party straying.
Definitely. I mean, I will say, when you were just talking about the reference in the order, it reminded me, I did have a judge one time. She didn't reference a statute, but for a temporary alimony award, we had gone in and done a long, long hearing, and the wife was really mad because the husband was cheating on her with her best friend. So understandably, she was really, really mad. But the judge, that particular judge, was a female judge who was paying alimony herself, the judge was, to an ex-husband. And so she just had it out for women who were looking for money from their men. And she actually referred to her as a gold digger in the order. And she actually referenced what the wife said on the beach when she found out that the husband was having an affair with her best friend, which included an F word. And she put that in the order, this particular judge. I couldn't believe it. I'd never seen that before. But, you know, going back to the shock of the judicial conscience, I mean, judges are people. They are people, human beings with their own biases and their own experiences and their own perceptions about things. And so they come to the table, even though they're cloaked in their robe and all of that pomp and circumstance and whatever, they're still human beings behind all of that. And they can like you or not like you. So I always tell my clients to try to be the one to wear the white hat. Because they're going to make judgments and decide who they like and who they don't. So,
yeah, know. I always reference that as the clean hands. You want to be the one going into court with clean hands, not the one who's going in there with, you know, your hands behind your back, trying to explain why you behaved in a certain fashion.
Exactly.
Because the judges, I agree, the judges are people, and that is a startling case where your judge actually referenced the behavior in her order, but that's a very good example of clearly that shocked her conscience, right?
It totally did. I mean, that particular woman had actually like put dog poop inside her husband's Bruno Mali shoes. Had burned his clothes.
Right out of the movies, right?
She did all kinds of bad things. And, you know, of course it came out in court. So.
Well, and that's what I always wonder is why the clients don't think that behavior is going to come out in court. Of course.
So do you have any examples of some of your clients' outrageous behavior that you could share?
Oh, certainly. After 30 years of doing this, I've seen more than my fair share of behaviors, but one that has always stood out because it was so extreme, and this is a case not where the judge, it impacted the judge's ruling on the case, but this is a case where my client's bad behavior with a mistress came back to bite him in the ass, so to speak, because he was afraid of the embarrassment factor that he had created for himself. This was a case where he got involved with another woman before the divorce was even started. And in the flurry of the new relationship, went out and spent an exorbitant amount of money on buying her Chanel bags and fur coats. He bought her a Mercedes, and really just in a very short period of time spent a significant amount of money on this other young lady. And then that relationship actually kind of petered out. And by the
Of course it did.
Of course, they usually do, right? That's the other thing people don't think of.
What, but was she much younger?
She was significantly younger. And he was, you know, very certain at the time he was spending all this money that this was his, you know, new intended life mate. But
well, what it course. Is, he thought that she, you know, and I think that she thought that she went very well with his wallet.
Yes. Very good.
It was a match made in heaven.
Well, and we knew that because when we got into the divorce proceeding, we ended up having several days of depositions. And of course, the now ex-mistress was being deposed. And in she marches to the deposition wearing the fur coat that my client had purchased for her, carrying the Chanel bag. The Mercedes was parked out in the parking lot outside the other attorney's office. And the next witness was the Mercedes dealer to talk about how my client had paid cash for this Mercedes for this young lady. So after a full day of testimony that...
That was very good work on the girl's part.
Yeah. Oh, that was, you know, the wife's attorney.
How long were they together?
They were only together. Honestly, I think it lasted about a month, about 30, 40 days.
That was excellent work for her.
Very good job on her part. Not so helpful for my client who had been married for 30 years. And I will say that case ended up settling and my client had to be considering throughout our settlement negotiations the embarrassment factor and the effect on his children of all of that excessive spending and bad behavior being brought out in a courtroom. And he ended up settling. We did, you know, keep it out of the courtroom and a judge never had to hear those details, but the fact that they could have been brought up definitely impacted that settlement and definitely cost my client more than the cost of that Mercedes Chanel bag, fur coat, and there was assorted jewelry involved as well. So,
well, humiliation is a great incentivizer, I think.
Absolutely, and the other attorney knew that, and she leveraged it to the full max.
Well, I'm quite sure that you and I would have done the same.
Absolutely, and I'm sure you've had, you know, similar situation.
Yeah. I mean, you use whatever leverage you can get, right?
Right.
I had a situation one time where the husband did also spend tons of money on the girlfriend. It all came out in deposition. Jewelry, all kinds of things. And this was even after the divorce had been filed, but the case wasn't over yet.
Right.
And of course, he's fighting paying alimony to the wife and saying he had no money. Meanwhile, they go through his credit card statements, the other side does, and see all these purchases for jewelry and you know, trips and, you know, and there's Facebook posts of, them.
Always the Facebook posts, right? The social media always comes back to bite you in the ass.
Yeah, you mentioned one time you had somebody was posing on a yacht or something.
Oh, yeah. That was one of my favorite pictures. The wife came in and my client had just finished testifying about how he could barely afford to keep the roof over his head. And then the wife came in, the ex-wife at that point, it was a post-dissolution hearing. And the wife, ex-wife came in and she had huge blown up shots of the girlfriend's Facebook page showing my client sitting on his yacht down in South Florida with
the but she paid for that herself.
Yeah, exactly.
She paid her own way.
Oh, you were there in court. You heard that.
I think I've heard this before.
that's sort of, we do see repetitive patterns, unfortunately, in humans, don't we?
But I know, she made her own way. That wasn't him. He didn't pay for that.
I think your point in your example, Rebecca, is a good one for our listeners to note, though. In your case, the spending happened after the divorce was filed. So this extramarital relationship, if you want to call it that, or adultery, happened after the divorce was filed, but still had an impact. And many people think, well, if my relationship started after I've filed for divorce, it clearly doesn't have any impact on my divorce settlement. But in your case, it did.
Well, it did because of his egregious amount of spending. I mean, you know, had he just been dating and casually dating and, you know, even doing whatever he wanted and even going to dinner here and there, that sort of thing is not a big deal. But the fact that he had been spending so much on her, he paid for her to go to swanky hair salons and did, you know, and then tried to, you know, it was like a $500 hair bill and tried to say it was for himself.
When he was bald?
No. Pretty much, he was balding. So, you know, and that particular guy thought that he was being all cutesy, and one of the temporary support checks that he signed and sent over to the wife, he actually signed it in crayon and just put his first name. And I think he wrote it with like his left hand or something. And he was right-handed. And it looked, you know, like all sprawled, like a five-year-old had written it. Well, of course, that was the centerpiece of the trial exhibits from the other side.
And you know, the clients always think that sort of thing isn't going to come in, but you know, that evidence is always relevant.
Yeah, just remember that any piece of writing is a potential trial exhibit. So if you don't want to see it again, then
certainly not in those circumstances.
Yeah. And so that particular case, he ended up paying permanent alimony on an 11-year marriage.
Wow.
And so it was so egregious. I mean, that particular judge, again, completely shocked. You know, here it is in Florida, where in that particular county, there are nearly 300 new family law cases filed a month. There are only two family law judges, so hundreds and hundreds of cases they see. So if it gets to the point where they are shocked and they do more than just go through whatever the normal procedure is for all cases, then you're at way out of line, way out of line. So
it's a good point that even filing for divorce is not a carte blanche to now start behaving in any fashion that you know, living your new life to the full. That's the client excuse I hear all the time. Well, I'm moving on and I want to, you know, share my life with this new person and it's nobody's business. It actually still is the business of your divorce and it still can have a very significant impact.
Absolutely. And have you ever seen it where it impacted a parenting plan or a custody situation?
I have actually seen situations several times, and they're actually very difficult. But I have seen cases. I had one just a couple of years ago where a dad who was in the midst of a very difficult divorce process. We had children who were exhibiting signs of stress as a result of the parental, you know, dissolution of marriage. And dad had a new significant other. Dad was my client, and he was very sure that this new person was his forever mate. And so it became very important to him that his children get to know his new significant other and bond with her. So without discussing it with his soon-to-be ex-spouse, the children's mother, with me, or with anyone, he created a situation where his children met the girlfriend and introduced her to his children as their new mother. And I use that phrase. He literally said to them, this is, I'll use the name Becky, and she's going to be your new mom.
You're but it wasn't me.
No, Bill, right. No, it was not Rebecca.
And I just call her Susie. Yeah,
and it wasn't me either. Never that. But, you know, that was a case. And in that particular case, that, of course, that wreaked incredible havoc. It led to more than a year-long custody battle with evaluators, psychiatrists, and psychologists. It caused the children a great deal of additional stress. And I will tell you, in the court order, it was specifically referenced, that particular phrase that Dad used, this is Jane. Let's change her to Jane. Jane, she's going to be your new mom and you're going to love her. And the judge was, again, the judicial conscience was absolutely shocked. And the judge really questioned my client's parenting ability, and he paid for it. He ended up without final decision-making with respect to his children, which means that his ex-spouse, who was now not very pleased with him as a parent, did not have to consult with him in making final decisions regarding the children's best interests. That is a devastating result. And in this particular case, as in the other one, that was not his forever mate. That relationship ended before the divorce was finalized.
Oh, so new mommy is gone already?
Exactly. She's not going to be your new mom. And I think that's, you know, they're never going to be the new mom or the new dad. And there's an appropriate time to introduce your significant other. It is rarely during the divorce proceeding.
Yeah. Well, I had a guy one time, we actually had written into a temporary agreement that while the case was pending, that neither party would introduce new significant others. And, right. You know, all of a sudden this person is showing up at baseball games and all of this. And, you know, this is Daddy's new friend.
Right. Not girlfriend. So that makes it okay. Right.
Yeah. But of course the kids know exactly what's going on. And so does the soon to be ex-wife
and the other parents, right. That are at the kids' baseball game.
Of course. And then Daddy's new friend is spending the night in the same bed. And now it's not just a problem of, you know, potentially tainting the judge or having the judge think badly of you, but you could also be held in contempt of court because you're violating a court order. So all kinds of bad things could happen as far as sanctions.
Yeah. I mean, don't you see that? Or I have often seen that is not an uncommon clause in temporary support order or temporary parenting orders when you're going through maybe a difficult divorce. I often see the prohibition on significant others.
Yeah, but whether or not people will actually do it, you know.
Right.
So I actually had a situation one time where the guy had a mistress on the side for like 20 years. And during that 20-year period, he had actually had a child with his new mistress, or I guess long-term mistress, and ended up, because he had a child with her, he bought her a house, he was supporting the child, he put the child through private school, he actually even had this huge company, so he was able to put the mistress and the child on his payroll so that he could give them health insurance. And she could start to get Social Security benefits and things like that. Of course, she wasn't doing anything for pay.
Right.
Other than, well, you know.
Yeah. So he really set up a whole separate family structure.
Yes. Yes. And so way more expensive than if he had just went and hired an escort or something, I'm sure. But, But anyway, so the wife all this time had no idea, if you can believe it. And so what happened was he ended up having to pay her half of everything that he had spent on all of that stuff. So this was in Florida, which is an equitable distribution state. So we start in Florida from the premise of 50-50. but then there are reasons why you can do an unequal split. I always say equitable doesn't mean equal, it means fair. Right. And so that he got spanked big time by the judge.
Must have added up to a pretty large number if it went on for that many years.
Yeah, big time. And the wife got half of all that back. So, you know, that's what happens in situations like that. So
we've seen the same in California, you know, and Connecticut, both places where I've practiced. I've seen the court carve back and even include interest on the amount that a spouse spent on a significant other, either during the marriage or if is in your case example where they spend quite a bit of money even during the divorce and give that back to the original spouse.
Of course, here in California, because it is a community property state, there's way more latitude. Isn't that right?
That's true. I would say California has probably one of the broader get away with adultery passes that you have in the country. And it's because of that community property. So because the court has much less discretion, and that's what we've been talking about really with shocking the judicial conscience, means that if you do that, the judge in their discretion can give one of the parties more than the other. In California, judges have much less discretion because of the community property, which is intended to be a very bright line as to who gets what, but they still do have that carve back ability and will do that where one of the parties goes and spends funds, community funds on a significant other. So you do definitely still see that here in California.
Yeah. So the moral of the story is if you're going to cheat,
be discreet.
Be discreet.
Absolutely. Please.
So thank you all for joining us today. Susan?
Yeah, so I just want to say if you have a family law matter or have any questions on this, you can reach out to me at Connecticut Family Law Online, ctfamilylawonline.com.
And I'm Rebecca Zung, and you can find me at rebeccazung.com. I also am offering to our listeners a free copy of my best-selling divorce book, Breaking Free, A Step-by-Step Divorce Guide to Achieving Emotional, Physical, and Spiritual Freedom. And you can get that at breakingfreethebook.com. So thanks for joining us.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life. So join us again next Monday for another edition of Breaking Free, A Modern Divorce Podcast.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, A Modern Divorce Podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. For a limited time, get your free copy of Rebecca's best-selling divorce book, Breaking Free, A Step-by-Step Divorce Guide to Achieving Emotional, Physical, and Spiritual Freedom at www.breakingfreethebook.com.
And for your free copy of Susan's Top 10 Reasons to Mediate Your Divorce, visit www.divorceinabetterway.com.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and let us know what you liked in a review.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.